What do you guys think the last weird Johnny Depp movie before he got too dumb and weird? I guess was here's what I had not considered.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but I'm not sure. Alice in Wonderland.
Oh yeah. Okay.
That
so that was 2010.
Too far
or like,
way too far.
See, again, I don't know if the fault is him or if the fault is like
Burton.
The really crappy screenplay, because that movie has like one of the worst screenplays I've ever seen. Yeah.
But I also think,
and like I fault him and I fault Burton, but the screenplay is just like abysmal in that movie.
I think that's also where I started to turn hardcore on Burton.
Yeah, maybe some of the John Depp weirdness got like, yeah, this is just weird.
The breakdancing sequence at the end.
No.
Or what about like the occasional lisping?
No, that's what I'm saying. His weird 5-year-old voice is what I was going to say. He talks like a child.
And I'm like,
the Futterwacken.
His head spins around.
His head spins around.
Like Reagan in The Exorcist.
Yeah.
You're going to say like the President Reagan.
Me too.
Like Reagan in Bedtime for Bonzo.
No, it literally does
that classic.
Well, those monkeys. They're just driving my head clear off my shoulders, mommy.
But it does start with his head doing an anatomically impossible spin.
Turn.
Yeah, yeah.
God,
I have forgotten like all of that until
like,
now.
Music plays. Hold on.
Yeah.
This is
so weird. Oh my god.
Oh god.
It's worse than I remember.
What is he doing? It's so weird.
Make it
stop. Oh my god. Special Halloween episode of Why Do We Watch This, the podcast where we watch a bad movie, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, make a theme cocktail, and try to fix it or something like that in that order. My name is Brendan Pulsating Blood Urn Drischler.
I am Lee Tiny Songstress Delahanty.
And I'm Chris, horror at Beelzebub Ravel.
And we just watched Tim Burton's Dark Shadows from 2012, starring Johnny Depp, Ava Green, Michelle Pfeiffer, and everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into Dark Shadows with a synopsis and our discussion, I'm going to cover the drink that we made for Dark Shadows. The drink that we made is called Collins Port Punch. It had 2 parts amber rum, 1 part Prosecco, 2 parts pineapple juice, 2 parts orange juice, maraschino cherries, and orange wheels. I also see now, according to my recipe, we're supposed to add simple syrup. Don't you think that would have been overkill?
Yes. That would have been way too sweet.
That would have been disgusting. Okay.
As it was a very potent.
Oh, super potent. Yeah.
I'm pretty drunk right now.
Yeah, I am too.
I disagree. I had 4 glasses of it, and I don't feel that.
Wow.
I was eating consistently throughout. Maybe that stopped it, but like
yeah.
I had a lot of it, and I didn't feel like too crazy.
I think we're discovering Lee the Tank. This is what's happening.
Yeah,
it was
great. It felt like we were transported back to like a party in a 70s den.
Yeah, we wanted something cheesy and boozy, like that you would have seen in like a shitty party like this in the 70s.
It was good. I mean, the fact that I drank 4 glasses of it, that's more than I do for many of these drinks.
It should also be said that when we say glasses, these were like little teacups.
Yeah, they're little teacups.
Yeah,
they
like,
were like punch bowl cups.
Yeah, no, I don't want anyone to assume that like we drank like 4 like, you know, tumblers worth of
glass, yeah.
Which would be pretty impressive.
Yeah, I drank 4 magnums.
So before we get into the discussion then, Chris, do you want to cover the synopsis?
Yeah, and what a Herculean task this will be.
All right.
So we start in 1760 when the Collins family moves from Liverpool, England to Maine and establishes the fishing town of Collinsport where they build their estate called Collinwood. When he first arrives, the young son Barnabas, eventually Johnny Depp, meets the young Angelique Bouchard, played by Eva Green later, who instantly becomes besotted with him. Angelique's witch mother, who was with her at the time, warned her of socializing with people of noble birth. This, however, did not stop Angelique from following the family for many years, hoping to be loved by Barnabas, but to no avail. That's what it says here.
Okay, I'm gonna put
right.
A pin in this real quick.
They never,
what to do?
Ever
yes.
Say she's a witch.
We both looked at each other at the same time and said, what?
No, I didn't say what because I read the Wikipedia
okay.
story. And so, like, I kept meaning to bring that up because I remember reading that and being like, why?
That, okay, yeah. That,
where did I get
there
this
is
from?
No fucking precedent for her mother being... Her mother wears a hood and says, like,
yeah,
Angelique, I told you not to look at him.
It's probably because, like, in the show, her mother's a witch.
I'm sure, yeah, it's gotta be some, like, nerd from the show who's really reading into this crap.
It's not a summary of the show, it's a summary.
No, but I'm sure there was some nerd from the show who went in and was like, well, actually, in the show, her mother was, in fact, a witch. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's just there's a lot more of that. By 1776, Barnabas, now grown man, falls in love with a young woman, Josette Dupress?
Dupree? Maybe, I don't know.
Played by Bella Heathcote, and he scorns Angelique, who at that point was working as a maid in his household. She turns to black magic and curses the entire Collins family, first killing Barnabas's parents with a gargoyle, and then by enchanting Josette to leap to her death from a cliff called Widow's Hill. In a fit of grief, Barnabas attempts to leap to his own death, but fails as Angelique curses him to the immortal life of a vampire. When he still rejects her advances, she turns the town against him, and they bury him alive in a coffin. 196 years later, in 1972, Maggie Evans, under the assumed identity of Victoria Winters, also played by Bella Heathcote, applies for a job as a governess at Collinwood and meets the current matriarch, Elizabeth Collins Stoddard, played by Michelle Pfeiffer. Elizabeth's nephew, David, for whom Victoria will be caring for, believes his mother, who drowned in a boating accident, still visits him. Victoria does not divulge that since her young age, she too can see ghosts. After meeting with David, his live-in psychiatrist, Julia Hoffman, Helena Bonham Carter, his father, Roger, Johnny Lee Miller, and Elizabeth's rebellious daughter, Carolyn, Chloe Grace Moretz, Victoria is hired. That night, Victoria sees the ghost of Josette, who warns her that, quote, he's coming, unquote, before disappearing after falling from a chandelier. A group of construction workers dig up Barnabas's coffin and inadvertently free him. He slaughters them all, therefore satiating his thirst, and returns to Collinwood and hypnotizes the groundskeeper, Willie Loomis, played by Jackie Earle Haley, as his personal Renfield, and introduces himself to the family as a distant relative. Elizabeth believes him to be a con man until he reveals hidden riches buried in a secret passage within the house, whereas Elizabeth thought the family to be destitute. After realizing who and what Barnabas is, she asks him to keep it a secret to protect the children from his true nature, passing him off as his own descendant, Barnabas Collins III. During breakfast with his newfound family, Barnabas is instantly smitten with Victoria when he meets her as she resembles Josette. Resolved to honorably win her heart, he seeks out Carolyn's advice on courting her. Angelique, now an immortal witch herself, learns of Barnabas's resurgence and visits him, informing him that she has now taken over Collinsport as a member of the upstanding community. In retaliation, Barnabas reopens the Collins cannery family business and uses hypnosis to steal several fishermen crews who work for Angelique. As a result, she tries to buy him off. However, after an episode of supernatural lust between the two, he rejects her offer. Meanwhile, Julia discovers his identity by hypnotizing him and offers to cure his vampiric condition via blood transfusions. After successfully restoring the family fortune and business, Barnabas decides to hold a ball to reintroduce the family to the townsfolk, with Carolyn suggesting that they make it a happening with musician Alice Cooper as the headliner. While at the ball, Barnabas catches Roger stealing from guests' coats and later finds Victoria gazing off of a balcony. Feeling uncomfortable around him, Victoria confides to Barnabas that she's actually an escapee from the mental asylum where her parents had her confined since she was a child due to her powers of seeing ghosts. Meanwhile, Angelique makes a grand appearance in order to seduce Barnabas. When she catches him and Victoria kissing, she becomes even more embittered. Motivated after Victoria reciprocated his feelings, Barnabas seeks out Julia, only to find that the latter has been using his blood to make herself immortal. Feeling betrayed, he kills her and dumps her body into the town bay with Willie's help. After catching Roger trying to break into the secret passage, Barnabas gives him a choice, essentially to stay and be a good father to David or leave with enough money to live his terrible life elsewhere. Roger chooses the latter to David's heartbreak. Barnabas' true identity is finally revealed to the rest of the family and Victoria when he saves David from a falling disco ball. Victoria is scared by the revelation and runs away. Upset, Barnabas barges into Angelique's office to demand her to release him from his curse, and while she offers him blood due to her knowing that Julia is no longer around to provide him with blood transfusions, she also threatens to send Victoria off Widow's Hill, the same way she did to Josette, and offers him an ultimatum. either become partners and lovers with her or be locked in the coffin again. With Barnabas rejecting the former, she proceeds to do the latter, this time placing him in the Collins family mausoleum. Shortly after, he is found and freed by David, alerted by his mother's ghost, and they return to the mansion. Meanwhile, Angelique destroys the Collins cannery and implicates Barnabas, forming a mob to go and invade the house. At the mansion, Barnabas and Elizabeth see the police, Angelique, and the angry mob approaching as Carolyn withdraws into the mansion. Willing to turn himself in as long as she goes along with them, Barnabas reveals his and Angelique's true nature to the angry mob, and a fight ensues, pitting Barnabas and Elizabeth against Angelique. During the fight, and following the mob's departure, Carolyn reveals to her family that she is a werewolf and joins her family in their battle against Angelique. A fire later breaks out in the house. Ultimately, the ghost of David's mother manages to hurl Angelique against a chandelier, which then falls to the ground, mortally wounding Angelique as she starts to shatter. She reaches into her chest and offers her beating heart to Barnabas this time, as that shatters as well, resulting in her death. Concerned for Victoria's well-being, Barnabas storms off to look for her as David informs him through his mother that she's headed towards Widow's Hill. As David asks Elizabeth what they will do now, Elizabeth said they will do what they've always done, the Collins family, endure. After catching up to Victoria at Widow's Hill, Barnabas stops her from leaping and refuses to turn her into a vampire to save her from eternal suffering as an immortal, despite her request. Touched, Victoria throws herself from its cliffs anyway, resulting in Barnabas leaping after her and biting her after all, so that she can survive the fall as a vampire. She awakens, asking him to call her Josette, and the two kiss passionately on the rocky shore. The closing scene, at the bottom of the bay, Julia opens her eyes to her new immortal life.
Ah, what a classic ending.
That was, felt like a tongue twister, and I have to say, I was tripping over a lot of very bad syntax in that summary.
So I feel like listening to that, you would say, there's a lot going on there, and yet somehow it still didn't make sense. How do these things track?
It feels like an underfurnished room. There's really not enough in this movie to support the amount of plot they attempted to cram in.
Yeah, or things like her mother being a witch.
Yeah. Or, yeah, it's... Or Angelique being a doll, which we'll get into, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, well, do you want to start with, like, the actors, characters in the cast?
I do.
Because I feel like that's a big thing.
It's a big thing, and I feel very into it. Where do we even start, though? This cast?
Well, we start with Johnny Depp, where all Tim Burton films start
of
with.
Course.
You start with Johnny Depp, and you just
ends.
Build from there. So what do you think of Johnny Depp in this movie?
I think he's fine at best.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think he does a serviceable job in general. I just found his performance to be so laden with tics. It was so ticky. It was like a lot of eye flares and like hands. And Lee pointed out a mouth thing that I couldn't unsee after she pointed it out.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah. So like his natural mouth pose is like pursed lips.
Well, yeah. But I think it's more that like as everything his mouth is doing is twice the amount of movement a normal human mouth has to make that sound.
Yeah.
He exaggerates the sort of shapes your mouth has to make certain letters.
So it starts kind of like pursed and pinched close to the center of the mouth. And then whenever he says anything with a longer vowel, it stretches all the way across his face.
Yeah. Like Cheshire Cat style.
He goes wide with it. I like the character Barnabas and I don't like anything about Johnny Depp in this movie.
Fair.
Why do you like Barnabas?
Because it's exactly my kind of character. He's sort of like tortured male hero with a guilt complex. And
that's fair. That is you.
It's me.
Yeah.
He's fighting against...
It's me.
He's fighting against a darker nature that he does not feel.
Yeah, and he's immortal and lonely and alienated from the rest of society. So it's pretty much got my name all over it,
yeah.
The character.
And yet...
But I don't like any of the places Johnny Depp takes it.
I also think part of it, and I think we should address this a little bit, but at this point we've kind of already... gone on this merry-go-round with Johnny Depp before. And by the time Dark Shadows came out, we've had enough. Like, we've had enough of the tics, we've had enough of the mincing around.
I feel this was around the time where we were like, we've
too
seen...
too long, Johnny. Glorious long, just got stuck in my head.
Like, this is around the time, I think, where we've we as a viewing audience started to realize that we've seen Johnny Depp play this before. Where it's like, he's gone to this well before. Like, at least with something like... you know, Jack Sparrow or Willy Wonka or something. It's like he's coming at this from a different place that I've seen him do it. Like, you might not like the decision he's making, but it's different. This just feels like a reheated version of, like, a character he's done before.
It does. And I would say it's a shittier version of, I would argue, his take on Ichabod Crane.
I was going to say Ichabod, too.
Yeah. Because Ichabod Crane has a lot of the same mannerisms, but he was able to, I guess, ladle them out in appropriate proportion, whereas I think you can kind of count on one hand the scenes in Dark Shadows where he's not 2'11" with the with the tics and the movements and the eyes, and it's
like Johnny Depp likes to make these characters that are very defined and quirky.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that even like there are aspects of like one of his more problematic characters, Tonto, that are like good.
There are good instincts there.
That were he created a character there, and I don't know that he did that with Barnabas.
No, there's just nothing unique here, I think, really.
Yeah.
Like even with Tonto, he was doing some different choices. And it was funny, but here
yeah.
it's just like this is like leftovers.
Well, and the thing that comes through for me in his performance, but I think also in the movie in general, I feel a lot of coasting on what they think is going to be really charming quirk and that you're just not going to care about any of the nuts and bolts of it. I just looked at that and was like, his performance in this is so shallow and superficial and cosmetic. Like, I don't feel him connecting to the character. I don't feel him playing much of the character.
So we were going through Johnny Depp's filmography earlier to try and find the moment where, like, Johnny Depp sort of lapsed into, like, the bad Johnny Depp, and we do think it was probably around Alice in Wonderland is where this all started to go wrong.
Yeah.
This was, in fact, after Alice in Wonderland. I wonder if we had done the same thing with Tim Burton.
Wonderland?
No, I don't.
Okay.
If we had done the same thing with Tim Burton, if we would have been able to clearly define, like, a moment where we started to realize, like, oh, he's just coasting on this shtick now.
Also that...
Maybe also...
It might also be
Alice in Wonderland.
That is true. I'm just trying to think if there was something before that that was, like...
I would almost push it a little earlier and say Corpse Bride, because the movie was so much nothing.
I feel like Corpse Bride was just, like, underwhelming.
Yeah, it was underwhelming. I don't know that it was, like... See, the Dark Shadows is different. Dark Shadows goes... It's too much of something that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, Corpse Bride was just, like,
too little.
Enough of something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, enough of anything to, like...
Not enough of anything.
To firmly say, like, this is bad.
And Dark Shadows is, like, too much of stuff that doesn't actually make anything.
Yeah, it's just too much nonsense.
It's, like, a bunch... It's, like,
A lot of jokes repeated
that
aren't
what's that dessert?
Funny.
Meringue.
Yeah.
It's, like, all air. All sugar, yeah, and
but
fluff.
But it's just
not but nothing's there.
I would even say it's a shitty meringue. Like, the peaks are not stiff.
Yeah.
It needed more whipping.
It's a pavlova.
Yeah.
Which I, by the way, I love
pavlova.
Okay,
love him too.
So
dessert
I still like guy. This metaphor as much as I
like pavlova.
Started out with. Well, yeah, I started out with because I love pavlova. This is like a bad pavlova.
But in terms of, I think in terms of movies, you don't want pavlova. You want...
See, I remember the first time we watched this. I think you were there the first time we watched this, like, years ago. And Lee had said that, like, Tim Burton at this point is less a director than a Photoshop filter.
Yes.
And that you just, like... Yeah, you did. That you just, like...
You know what? You're so fucking on the money.
Yeah.
Man, I'm good.
You are good. And that you just, like, turn on Tim Burton effect. Yeah, go for it. It's so, like, when you see... Like, it is sort of like when you go into a Tim Burton movie, you know what you're going to see.
And
like, you're going to either see, like...
Like, you're not surprised. You're
right.
Like, oh, you just look at the... You look at the concept art when it comes out, the stills, and you're like, oh...
Okay, it's like, oh, it's this. Right. Like, it's either, like... No color saturation whatsoever, or like bright candy colored psychedelia.
And here's the thing. I don't have a problem in general with like, oh, I like this director because I like the style this director puts out. Whatever. But I feel like there's so much boring, repetitive nature with a lot of Tim Burton's stuff now, where it's like he's making the same movie over and over and over and over.
I was trying to think also of like things he's done recently that I enjoyed. And I had hit on, would I talk about Big Eyes?
Yeah.
About how like Big Eyes at no point really feels like it's like the least Tim Burton movie a Tim Burton movie has ever been. And it's not a perfect movie, but it's a pretty enjoyable movie.
Okay.
Despite the fact like Christoph Waltz is like never at any point seems like an American.
No.
And he's what he's supposed to be. But like he just can't do that.
I actually got the feeling that they had like tried with the accent and they're like, you know what? It's not
just
worth it.
Just do you, Christoph. But I like that, and I mostly liked Frankenweenie, maybe again because like Frankenweenie did not have any of his Baker Street irregulars. Like it did not have Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp. It had people he worked with like Martin Short and Catherine O'Hara, Winona Ryder, like actors who I really like who he had not worked with in a long time.
Especially Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah, and Catherine O'Hara is always great. So it was just sort of like a welcome thing scene. And like there were problems with that. Like I thought the ending was a cop out, and I thought a lot of the puppet work was not great, and Winona Ryder's character was so like wildly undeveloped. But like like, it was a more enjoyable movie than I thought it was going to be.
But I think it makes sense. I do think that Tim Burton maybe thinks that he can just, like, spit out some shit.
And Hot Topic will make a line on
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Well, I think once upon a time, when these ideas were new and fresh, this was quite exciting. I become frustrated when the artists, or even just, like, great thinkers that I look up to, when they fail to evolve, I become almost angrily disappointed.
So, with Tim Burton, it's almost kind of like you have an uncle that you really love when you're a kid, and then you get old and you realize he's a little racist. And, like...
Yeah, and he's still telling the same
jokes. And he's doing this, and it's like, as a child, this was wonderful, but as an adult, I'm just kind of like, this isn't as great as I thought it once
you
was.
You changed, but he didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, at one point in your life, this is wonderful, and at a later point, it's not so much.
I would argue you need to look no further than his most recent movie, Miss Peregrine's School for Unusual Children.
I thought that was okay.
I thought it was okay, but it was absolutely a reversion to the
also,
regular song and dance that he does.
He is dealing with source material that is better than he is, probably.
Yes.
Well, see, yeah, I was going to say, like, so much of this depends on his script, like, is the thing, too. Like, I feel Dark Shadows would have been a pretty dull movie no matter who had done it.
That's true.
And, like, you know, it's just that... If he has a garbage script, there is nothing good that's going to come of this movie.
Yeah.
So, is it a fair jump to go from Johnny Depp to Helena Bonham Carter?
Yes.
Tim Burton's former...
Other problem?
Lover? Yeah.
I think the biggest problem with Helena Bonham Carter is that the character should not exist.
Yeah, that's no... The character has no reason to exist. And also, she doesn't have a reason to exist, really, until they slap on this thing about how she's afraid of growing old. Which comes out of fucking nowhere.
In the same scene in which she's killed.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it comes before that. She's talking to Barnabas, and she says something about how, like, you know, like, it sucks being old, and he's like, then you must have been the most beautiful woman to have ever graced the face of the
right,
blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so, like, but it still comes
That's
out
really
of fucking
good
nowhere.
Impression of Barnabas.
Thank you, Lee. So, yeah, it's almost like there's not really much you can say about her because she's such a small presence in this movie.
She's a small presence. There were moments she gave me that I enjoyed. It was like while we were watching it.
I enjoyed none of it.
I know. But while we were like watching it as a group, I liked the moments where she would totter and just like hungover and just like out of it. But then it's a useless character. It doesn't serve the plot.
And she gets killed off.
She gets
like,
killed off
very
quickly.
Yeah, with minimal effect.
She doesn't really have much going on. And then part of my irritation with Tim Burton is I think he leans too much on both Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter to, I guess, kind of cover up the holes in things. So it's like, well, these two are going to go so huge and they're going to be buried under wigs, prosthetics, and makeup that it's not going to matter what else is going on because everyone's just going to be drinking in these, like, weird performances they're giving us. And sometimes I'm game for that, but it just wasn't happening in this movie.
Well, I think that what you're doing is that I'm not doing is that you're forgiving... You forgive the... You let the acting of Eva Green and Helena Bonham Carter forgive the characters, whereas I refuse...
Oh, I'm not...
Forgive those characters.
I'm not forgiving the characters.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, you're there for the acting, but I don't even fucking care that
yeah.
Eva Green is a great actress. I just hate this character
yeah.
so much. I don't have any... brain space left.
So let's segue to Angelique then.
Okay,
Eva Green's character,
I
Angelique.
I don't have any gray matter when I'm watching Eva Green to be like, oh yeah, Eva Green is good. I just hate this character.
Yeah.
So why do you hate the character? Talk a little bit about...
She's very regressive.
That's
in
true.
A word.
Yeah.
Her whole character is this like maid from ancient times who is in love with this guy. And what is a little less fortunate is that like he does seem to like be want... like. Also into her, at least physically, because
mm-hmm.
they shows them banging. Either way, it's very regressive, but, like, she... Because they used to bang, but then he was like, actually, I love you, I just want to bang you.
Mm-hmm.
That's her entire motivation for being a villain.
Well, for
yeah.
turning to
well,
the dark
well,
side, and it's such a bummer.
But also,
yeah.
she then, even after, like, 200 years of, like, fucking everyone else in this family up and still doing it, like, she still decides to kill...
All... Because
the this one guy wouldn't fuck her.
Yeah.
200 years
but then
yeah.
even when he comes back, she's still like, but if you fuck me again, I'll
yeah.
I'll forgive him.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the? She's so fucking thirsty for this guy. And it's
yeah.
such a sad,
well,
like,
and it's
character.
Insulting because the movie tries to, I think, have it both ways with her character, where they're like, look how powerful she is. But all of that power is leveled the moment that Johnny Depp gives her a kind look. And
she's like, all you have to do, she literally is like, all you have to do is say you love me. And it's like, she doesn't even care. She's been told so many times that, like,
yeah.
even if he said that, it would be a lie. And she doesn't even fucking care. That's how fucking pathetic she is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is...
It's just awful.
And because I agree with absolutely...
Oh, yeah. From a character point of view, I can't disagree with anything you've
yeah.
said.
But, yeah, you're... What you guys have constantly saying is, like, I can't deny that I love Eva Green and other things, but I just have no time to even look at Eva Green.
I'm just,
every time I see her on this movie, I'm like, ugh!
I'm just going to put this out there, because I was thinking about this, too, while I was watching it again, is I feel about Eva Green in this movie the same way I feel about Emma Stone in La La Land, where I was like... You are handed such a raw deal of a character that has so little happening, and or at least so little interesting happening, and yet you managed to turn it into something that I found at least somewhat watchable. So I think in almost any other movie, Eva Green's performance would have been just, like, out of control broad and way too campy. But it fit, I think, for the one of the tones this movie struck.
I would rather watch her than watch Emma Stone in La La.
Oh, me too.
I that's not a great comparison for me, because there's nothing about that performance I enjoy. But
yeah, I mean, Brendan put it best,
yeah.
that in this movie, Eva Green is all teeth and sex.
Yeah, she's
and...
pure sex and teeth. Like, she's always, like toward the end, she really goes off the rails, like, at like in a good way, at, like, the final battle sequence, where she just, like, she has her head tilted so weirdly, and she's just, like, gradually, yeah, like, she has a huge, she's like, excuse me. It's, like, it's just, it's such a nuts performance that I can't help but still enjoy her, and, like... It is rough, because this is a garbage role. This is a thankless part.
Terrible.
It's terrible, but I really love her. And so I love seeing her in this role, even though it's one of the, like, the shittiest female roles I've seen in quite a while.
Likewise. Well, and I will also say it looked like she was having fun.
No, she seemed
and
to be having the most fun out of anyone on set. And,
yes.
You know, good for her, honestly.
And who came out? Who helped write this? How many people?
So it was, so John August did the first one, and then Seth Graham Smith did a rewrite of it.
He
Seth Graham Smith of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
And Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters.
Yeah, all
and
that shit. And
so, yeah, just like a whole bunch
so
of
So I wonder, I would like to read an initial copy of John August's script, honestly, to see, like, what this movie was and see, like, whose fault this really is. Because it does feel like it might be a Seth Graham Smith sort of thing.
When you told me he wrote it, it made a lot of sense. Just because it felt like a lot of the thinking stopped at the I have a good idea, and then everything else just sort of, like, happened day of,
yeah.
It felt like. Because it just sort of felt like, well, that's a cute idea, so that's just what we'll do. But no one really thought to develop it enough
yeah.
to make it into a movie. I would love to segue, though, onto a female character we loved.
Which one?
That was Michelle Pfeiffer playing
Oh,
Elizabeth.
Michelle Pfeiffer's the best.
Oh, she's wonderful. She's terrific in
she's
this,
fantastic.
Honestly.
She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Best acting, best
yeah.
character.
She just, like, she has such disdainful
oh.
eye rolls throughout this movie and everything.
I'm a fan or whatever the hell.
Well, it is just pronounced fan, but it's
yeah.
spelled...
So, yeah, it's the sort of thing
yeah.
that only works if you ever say in print. Just
yeah.
carry a card around with you and be like,
but
in
I
case
like,
you didn't know.
I like
know.
Mine better, my Pfeiffer. I'm a Michelle Pfeiffer.
She's wonderful.
Oh, she's really great in this.
But I think the one thing we... lands on is how, like, she always manages to time her entrance perfectly.
That's right.
She's standing at the top of
she's
the
always standing whenever anyone comes in, she's standing at the top of the stairwell waiting to descend.
She's off camera at the time and she gets to shout the name of the person she's about to address.
Barnabas!
Angelique!
Get out of my house!
Which, by the way, those are great names to proclaim from the top of your grand staircase. It's cool, too, that I felt like the character that she's playing is so much more of a straight man character to a lot of other people,
yeah.
like
yeah.
wild crazy.
Yeah.
She's just like a tough bitch.
But
yeah.
she holds her own in terms of, like, my eyes never could barely leave her ever.
Yeah.
And that's saying something considering how much vamp is going on.
She's the one character that doesn't have, like, a weird fucking tick about her.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the other one is Victoria, but Victoria's like a she's
a
nothing.
Doll.
She's a bit of watercress.
Wait, there was a character named Victoria in this
yeah,
movie?
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, do you want to say anything else about Pfeiffer aside from the fact?
Just the scene of her holding the shotgun is like when
it's
she
great.
Just when she just like appears on the staircase holding the shotgun. It's just it's such a great moment for her character
but
at
I mean,
the end.
On a serious note, I love her introductory scene where she pulls Barnabas into the room.
Yeah,
that's not her. It's Barnabas' introductory scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But when she pulls Barnabas in, and she's like very quickly gets to the bottom of like. Okay, I am dealing with somebody who is my vampire ancestor. All right, his family, he's going to help us.
Yeah.
I never get into the fold.
Well, and I also, the scene, like, after Angie shows up, and Barnabas is, like, mopey, and, like,
yeah.
and she, like, gives him a pep talk, and is like, pull your shit together. Like this is, like, you persevered, and you're going to persevere again.
Yeah,
that's
so
one of the few moments that really works well for me.
It's so great. And I also love that she was there for the scene where he dramatically flounces onto a keyboard, and it starts
yeah.
playing a boss note of a beat. It's great. But I love Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie. I actually love her in pretty much everything I see ever see her in. But I was just particularly impressed that in this camp fest of a movie, she was giving so much with such subtle
a grounded performance.
Yeah.
Goes a long way.
It does. It really
does.
It does.
And I loved how much whenever Carolyn was ever doing anything, her daughter Carolyn was ever doing anything, she just had this face of like, ugh, enough. Like,
That was how everyone reacted to Carolyn.
It's
just like...
Like, eye rolls, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's Carolyn.
That's Carolyn. By the way, I also really like Carolyn, I have to say. I like the... Mm. I do. I actually really like her constant snarl of a face. I like if you're going to do a character who is a surprise werewolf that,
that's
like...
That's also something she always does in every role.
I don't know who this fucking person is, and I don't know Grace Moretz.
I mean, surely she has been in, like, teeny crap where she wasn't playing, like... A snarky smart gal. I think you're making the generalization, Mr. Ravel.
Which is all the movies I've seen.
Mr.
Right?
Ravel.
That's a...
I did like her weird dancing scene.
I did too. That's one of the... They're all sitting down to dinner. And she's playing Season of the Witch. And in the background, you just see her dancing
like,
throughout most of the scene.
Yeah.
Like posing really weirdly.
I like her in the scene when... There's a lot of things I don't like about the scene where Barnabas goes to Carolyn for love advice. But what I do like is how... It, like, for a three solid back and forths, Carolyn is just, like, has the same shot of her being, like, sunken back in her, like, 60s bed.
Just sort of
like,
what's your deal?
It's so weird. And he just says something else, and she's like, you're so weird. It's literally just the same line three times in a row, like, you're way too weird.
The reveal of her werewolfiness is when Ava Green is thrown through the roof of the, like, the entryway, the foyer, whatever the fuck it is, the living room.
Onto Carolyn's bed.
Yes, into Carolyn's room. And Carolyn is standing, like, in a rafter as a werewolf girl.
And she's like,
get out of my room! And then, like, minutes pass, and then Carolyn... Yeah, and she does. To be fair, she listens. Yes.
Yeah.
She gets out when asked.
And then Carolyn jumps down to have her turn fighting Angie.
Yeah.
And, like... Michelle Pfeiffer's like, Carolyn, my God, what's happened to you? She's just like, I'm a werewolf. Let's not make a big deal about
it. But then the movie feels the need to explain it in, like, a rushed monologue I was the one that sent the werewolf to bite her in the crib. Which, by the way, point of order, a werewolf bit a baby in the crib and no one noticed a massive amount of blood?
I don't even think, it's just the fact that, like, at no point during the full moon was anyone ever with Carolyn anywhere to see her turn to a werewolf.
Yeah.
That's what I find weird.
Well, whatever you find weird about it, I think they should not have explained, that monologue shouldn't have been in there.
No!
It's fine, if you were going to do the joke about someone surprised werewolf, then that's all you say is, like, I'm a werewolf, don't make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
That's the last time you hear the word werewolf.
But then it was also, like, a huge rush just to make Angelique the absolute villain, because she also killed David's mom, and she also...
Was that ever in doubt, really? I mean,
I wonder the same... I guess I wonder, like, yeah, if she had not explicitly said this, like, we know that she's cursed the family, we know that she hates the family.
We know that she wants to kill every client.
Like, can we not infer that she had done these things without her monologuing about how she did them all?
Yeah.
Yes is the answer, in fact.
Yes.
Oh, wait, let's say real quick, Johnny Lee Miller, very fun.
Very fun,
but does nothing.
Yeah, it's a nothing character, but he milks it for all it's worth.
Yeah.
He really does. Even on shots where he doesn't have lines, he's, like, serving a lot of face.
Well, there's the one shot before the ball where everyone just, like, sort of looks at Barnabas. It's like Carolyn looks, Elizabeth looks, and they cut to Roger going, like, yep,
like
nodding. Yeah.
Yeah, I would do want a ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And the scene of him at night when Barnabas is coming out of the thing from behind him,
he's
funny. He's just like eyebrow raised to the ceiling of his head, like, what is happening?
Well, I had no idea that Johnny Lee Miller could have such a rubber face, because it really is like one eyebrow up, one eyebrow down, and then they sort of seesaw, and his mouth is kind of doing something. It's great.
No, he's fun in the movie, which
we got to see more, like, kind of goofy Johnny Lee Miller.
Hmm?
Remember when he was a lawyer who had seizures?
Yes,
I do.
And there was a lot of
yes.
It was different, like song and dance numbers.
Yeah,
like the first episode was all
it was Faith. George Michael.
Yeah.
George Michael was God in the show.
By the
way, spoilers. He's God.
Yeah.
What a great show that was for one season.
What was it called?
Eli Stone.
That's
I have it on DVD.
Towards the end, like, one of the last music ones they did was, they had, like, ooh, Katie Holmes is here to do a jazz number. And I was like, oof. Bye, Eli Stone.
And the cancellation just came in the next day.
Yeah.
Real quick, the kid who played David, he's good. He's
fine.
Fine.
He's fine.
Like, it is weird, though, that they say, like, he's a very troubled boy. But
he
seems very well-adjusted.
The movie forgets about that in Innocent. He's not troubled. He just has
a
ghost mom.
Yeah, he has a ghost mom that he talks to. But
and
he doesn't seem, like, angry.
But, I mean, they tell you he has a ghost mom he talks to.
But
you don't
see it.
But you don't see him do it until the end.
Right.
So it feels very last minute.
It's weird that you just don't see him talking, like, to nothing. Like, I feel like you saw him, like, in the corner having a conversation, he was like, oh, I'm just talking to my mom. You would have cause to be like, okay, like, this kid's trouble.
Well,
like, he's got issues.
Maybe they did, but they're like, you know what's more important is that Victoria flashback scene where she's doing the same thing.
Or, you know what's more important? Let's have Angie and Johnny Depp fuck.
Yeah. So, Victoria / Josette.
I mean,
who is she? Where did she go?
Where did she come from?
Who is she, Cotton Eye Joe? I don't even know what to say.
I mean, that's all. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Victoria, maybe she could have acted if she was given a character to act.
She was a blonde-haired, pale-eyed waif, and she delivered all of her lines so placidly.
Yeah.
Victoria's not blonde.
Oh, sorry. Whatever.
No,
Josette. That's a little of her reddish.
Yeah, Josette
is
blonde. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Victoria's not.
Victoria's reddish brown.
Yeah.
But it's like she would say things that you would think would call for some kind of emotional feeling. Like she was like, "I finally feel like I'm at home here." Okay.
Yeah, it does sound like she was on antidepressants.
Like
Paludes or something. Like,
yeah. That's how she was in the movie.
She needed antidepressants to
Well, I guess,
up.
No, what I was thinking of was like she was, like, if she was, like, bipolar and was on meds to level her out, that's what it felt like to me.
Like, she overdid her lithium that week and she
was
like, oh, yeah, I feel at home.
Like, when her first thing, the scene with David, where she's like, oh, David, you're wearing a ghost costume.
What a scary ghost you are, David.
What a scary ghost you are. And it's like she's supposed to be, like, you know, being charming to a child.
Yeah, but she just stood flat, like.
That's how I talk to kids.
Yeah, yeah. And you should never talk to kids the way Lee talks to kids.
I have -20 charisma to kids.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And the movie forgets about her for long stretches. Like, honest to God, at the end, when Johnny Depp tries to save her from jumping off the cliff, it's like you forget that she was even a part. Like it's
when
just like, oh, right, we have to do that stuff.
When they cut to her stomping out to Widow's whatever, the peak.
You know, it's Widow's Hill. It's Widow's Hill. You would think it'd be Widow's Peak. Wouldn't Widow's Peak make a lot more sense?
Because it is a peak.
Yes. And Widow's Peak is like a thing.
Yeah.
It's just... anyhow.
But when they cut to her, like, stomping out to there, I was like, oh, right. That was a thing. Like, they could have ended the movie before that, and I would have been like...
At the end. Like, with Rebecca, with the shot of the house burning and the family just standing there.
Yeah, because every time they would cut... Anytime, you know, all five, they would ever cut back to Victoria, I had already forgotten about her and was like, right.
Yeah.
She's in this movie.
Mm.
And then she dives off a cliff.
But she doesn't really do anything.
And she turns into a gothic Burton dream girl at the end. With, like, her super, like, her enormous eyes and her, like, black eyeliner.
It really is like someone just took two pieces of coal and just were, like, all over her eyes.
Yeah.
And then just found, like, the darkest lipstick to put on her face while then also putting on just, like, a metric fuckload of
powder. You couldn't see it
because
it was off-frame, but she had an Invader Zim wristband on as well.
It makes sense because her hair was like wet and slicked and it was just stupid. Like she had what, like 4 scenes of dialogue with
Well, that's the other thing too,
Barnabas.
Is her interaction with Barnabas, it's the first time we see them interact, it's when they meet.
Yeah.
The second time is during
Brief.
A montage where nothing is said except you see him reading love story to her.
Mm-hmm.
The third time, it's when like they're at the shore and she's like, David was down here.
David
and that's
likes
like,
you a lot, which,
yeah.
by the way, we also don't see.
Which we also, do not see. And then I'm pretty sure the next scene is them at the party, which
the
is
balcony,
like
which
toward
is...
the end of the movie.
Yeah, and she's that... like, I loved you this whole time.
Yeah.
Like, what?
When did this happen?
Well, and he says he loves her, and you're also like, when?
No, at least you're told that he does.
That's true.
And, like, I can believe that, too, because, again, you were told that he loved the past self. But, again, which, again, is also a super undeveloped relationship.
Real quick.
What?
Jackie Earle Haley as
He's
Louis
good.
Loomis.
Like, yeah, I like his...
It was fun.
He has a few
fun.
Jokes that land pretty well.
Yes.
Like, whenever he's being hypnotized and Johnny Depp asks, like, what month is it or something, he says October.
Yeah,
that's why there's pumpkins.
Like, that's part of the thing about gags. I think, like, the character... I don't have much to say about his acting, but I do have a lot... A lot of the jokes that I like come from him.
Well, let's go to Tone and talk about some of the jokes that worked for us. Let's also talk about how the fact, like, to begin with, this movie is wildly inconsistent in terms of being, like, a, it's not funny enough to be a comedy and not interesting enough to be a drama.
No.
So it's somewhere in between the
two.
Correct.
Not interesting enough.
Within this world, I think I was really struggling with this question because I was kind of setting aside, I don't think I was going to get to the bottom of, like, who is this movie for?
Hot Topic, Tim Burton fans.
It's for Hot Topic to sell money.
Yeah, like this, that is the, like, because again, so here's the thing. It's not faithful enough to the source material to be, like the 20 fans of the show to go in and be like, boy, finally, a movie.
Right.
But it's not, like,
yeah.
It doesn't stand on its own feet well enough to, like, attract new crowds. So it's, like, I feel like if you watch this movie, you'd be like, why the fuck did anyone ever care about this TV show?
It's to get Hot Topic customers to buy more stuff.
No, it really,
it's
this
like Hot
feels...
Top, people that were into Jim Tim Burton or shop on Hot Topic would be like, oh, they're adapting this thing that I've never heard of. Oh, it was a soap opera about vampires. That sounds so cool.
Oh, but it's
yeah.
Tim Burton?
Oh.
I'm in.
Yeah, I can buy a Barnabas jacket on HotTopic.com. Great.
Yeah. Do you think that was the purpose from the jump, or do you think there was, like, a genuine, like...
My understanding is that Tim Burton and Johnny Depp both really liked Dark Shadows. Like, it was something they enjoyed watching. Yeah, the show.
Okay.
So this was something that they, like, thought would be really fun to do. And again, maybe they had fun on set. Like, it would not surprise me if they did.
Yeah.
But I think the get-go was the fact that this was something that Tim Burton thought was fun and wanted to do.
Okay.
I don't think any of that shows in the movie, though.
No.
It does, because, like, again, it doesn't seem like he was so devoted to the show that he wanted to do it seriously. Because, again, the show was a soap opera. It was like a gothic, angsty soap opera. But at the end of the day, it was supposed to be taken very seriously.
Yeah, and this movie is so fucking... It's got so much goof shit.
Yeah, it's like... there's so many goofy moments that undercut the seriousness of, like, the absurdity of this vampire showing up.
And no drama is ever played for drama. It's always played for over-the-top.
Yeah.
I almost wondered... Because a lot of the jokes... Effective and not effective were kind of based on poking some kind of ironic fun at this sort of, like, high gothic concept. So I could kind of see that as the angle of, like, we're going to take this very serious thing and, like, poke some good-natured, affectionate fun at it. But they didn't really go all the
they're
way.
More, honestly, they're more poking fun at the 70s. Like, they're not really poking fun at the concept of a vampire soap opera.
Yeah.
It's more like... Weren't the 70s goofy? Like, they loved the Carpenters back then.
Weren't hippies stupid?
Yeah. Isn't it all right to kill hippies?
Fuck that scene. Fuck that scene. Which, actually, that's a pretty good encapsulation of the tone problem.
Yeah.
Because he goes...
That's true.
In one scene, and you need... Listener, need you no context because the scene has no relationship to the rest of the movie... But Barnabas goes to hang out with hippies.
Well, the scene, to be fair, the scene is ostensibly him trying to learn about love.
Yes.
He does not.
He does
no,
not.
No, there's just, like, a bunch of hippies, and they
like, they're talking about, like,
nonsense.
Yeah, they're talking about, like, nonsense that, like a 20-something might think hippies would talk about.
Yeah,
like,
it's like a cartoon version.
Peace is the enemy of war.
Yeah,
like,
man.
Anyone who's had one time of smoking weed would sort of understand the type of conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also, like, it's the kind of conversations that, like, a 50-year-old thinks stoners now have.
Yes, yeah.
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 It's just
like,
wildly, like, not real in any way. Nothing about it feels real.
It sounds like
and it's
high.
Like,
yes.
Listen, we all say really dumb shit when we're high. That happens. But I don't think I've ever said, like, this war. Like, really?
The
but,
war is, this war is, this,
it's going to be the end of all
end
wars.
All
yes.
Wars because peace wins everywhere.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is the joke supposed to be, like, these idiots don't realize that obviously, many more wars happened.
Yeah, I'm sure that
70s.
Does seem like it's the joke is that these people at one point maybe thought that war would stop.
So the scene starts off jokey,
mm-hmm.
I would say at least. But then it kind of takes a turn for the serious because Barnabas is sort of starting to wax poetic about love and it seems to be genuinely affecting these
but
hippies.
But he's not really waxing poetic, he's reciting love stories.
Yeah.
Like a very 70s reference.
Yeah. And it's also played for laughs because it's, he's reciting it as like a very like pompous sort of like profound way.
But it's,
love means never having to say you're sorry.
Yeah.
Like all that.
Which like literally What's Up Doc did at the time almost.
Yeah.
And it was played for laughs then.
Yeah. So like you can tell how stale this shit is at this point.
It's how stale it is but to do it in a movie from 2012.
Yeah.
But then in almost an interesting double twist, the scene then takes a turn for horror when he's like, I'm sorry, I have to kill you all. It's the complete wrong tone for the read of the scene.
That all these
But
then why does it sound scary?
Right,
it
and like the music is very like ominous, and you cut away to a wide shot of like people screaming in the distance.
A campfire.
Yeah.
And I think based on what the movie and the soundtrack is telling you is this is a scary moment.
Yeah.
When I first watched this movie, however many years ago, I fully expected the next shot was going to be him stumbling back into Colin's Manor high because he drank their blood. Do you know what I mean?
I do. There's a lot of restraint in the movie and not showing that, to be fair. Like, you feel like 100%
like,
that should have been
shot.
The next joke.
Yeah.
The thing is that you can't have a movie with a dark comedy with a vampire protagonist. If you're going to have that, I can't hear the horrified screams of Uranus and Phoebe.
No. Yeah. Nope, that's 100% true.
That's a different movie.
It really is!
Yeah, and it does reflect, I think, the Whiplash tones that this take. How
yeah.
it starts off as goofy and then gets to sort of more serious, then gets to, like, a horror movie at the end. And you're, as the Alliance member, you're supposed to go along with it and not feel like Barnabas is bad,
well,
right?
Right.
No,
like,
it's sort
just
of...
can't help it.
Yeah.
The reason why I gravitate towards that scene is sort of, like, kind of a summation of what's wrong here in terms of tone, is that even in that serious moment, it's still also a joke, because he's reciting Love Story. So they're telling us it's a serious moment, but we're not supposed to take it too seriously. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what is the audience supposed to take away?
No, it's again, it's like, if you guys don't care about this scene, like, if
why
you, like,
I?
Yeah, if you, like the writers and directors don't give a shit, why do I give a shit right
in
now?
In fact, the thing that comes across to me the most in that scene is just, like, contempt. Like, for the 70s, for hippies, for Love Story, for the whole thing.
I mean,
I have a lot of contempt for the Love Story.
No, we all should have contempt for Love Story, let's be honest. Like, there's
yeah.
nothing to like there.
Yeah.
Also, the line... love or means never having to say you're sorry is fucking bullshit.
No, of course. It's terrible.
It's fine to make fun of hippies. There are plenty of things you can make fun of.
Sure.
Hippies. There's
yeah.
things you can make fun of about the 70s, but, like, it's very, it's simplistic, amateurish making fun
push
of hippies.
Please.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's lot of that in this. Like, there's a
yeah.
lot of going for the very, like,
well,
low-hanging fruit.
Because you're fucking talking to 10-year-olds who weren't alive in the 70s, and you're
right.
like, ha, bell bottoms.
Yeah,
ha.
Yeah.
Wow,
yep. Look at the shit, like a troll
yeah.
doll. Isn't that comical?
That's literally what it is.
Oh,
yeah.
This movie.
The troll moment was restrained for this movie, which I wish there were more of those.
No, yeah.
He's a troll doll, and there's no lines.
Instead of being like, what? Ghoulish.
Yes, yes.
Is
he one of your gods?
He has, like, a perplexed, startled kind of look on his face, and then he sort of pokes it, and
yeah.
then he turns away to deliver his next line
yeah.
in the conversation.
Yeah.
And I was like, where was that in the rest of the
movie? He also does that to an operation board.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And it goes, brr,
yeah.
like, okay.
Had more moments been of just him sort of, like, poking and not saying, I would have been okay
me
with
too.
It.
It's a lot of times the words got in the way. If we're in tone,
yeah,
we need to talk about the sex scene.
All right, so the sex scene.
Well, it's horrible.
It's
my description of this scene is that if asexuals were the majority population in the world, this would be a stereotype of what sexual people are like.
Right.
Where sex is just, like, people being fucking thrown around
yep.
the room. Over and over again while obnoxious music
well,
plays.
It's almost like two dogs lapping at each other, you know what I mean?
I mean, so the weirdest thing for is, like, it's not sexy.
At all.
Like, there's nothing, like, I'm not saying I want it to be,
no.
but, like, there's nothing sexual. It is literally people throwing each other around and clawing at each other.
But
like,
it's also not, it doesn't read as violent. It's not why it upsets me. It upsets me because it feels like it's watching two clowns pantomime sex.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
That is so upsetting.
Is it meant to be, like...
funny?
No, but isn't in real, in actual sexiness, isn't there, like, a thing about hate fucking?
Yes.
There is. And
which is that is what
is
it's
this
invoking.
This is like it's
yeah.
supposed to be.
But I also think it's supposed to be invoking
it.
Of, like... hey guys, haven't you ever had an ex who you know you shouldn't, but you totally do?
Yeah.
I think that's, it's supposed to be
yeah.
a little bit of that. I believe it was Brendan that said, like, you know, Tim Burton doesn't really do sex scenes, but I guess
no, I'm saying he doesn't do, like, I don't think he does romance well in general.
Right.
Like, and that, again, goes more toward fucking Victoria than does for this. But, like, he has never done a sex scene prior, and it shows. I can't imagine this scene, even if this scene was not supposed to be played for quote-unquote laughs, I can't imagine him, like, this being, like, an interesting love scene in any way. Like, it is literally people throwing each other around. You don't see, like, they're having sex. They don't seem to be intimate. They're just throwing each other.
I don't think clothes come off.
No, they don't.
I've come up with another pithy description.
Okay, let's hear it.
So, you know how, like, so I...
What else?
You know how...
let me take a long sip of this water.
Can I... where's the brick wall?
Go ahead.
Welcome to the comedy
side. So, obviously, sex scenes are the opposite of child-friendly, but if you could have a child-friendly sex scene, it would look like this.
Yes!
Yeah, pretty much.
Because it's like the type of humor it's evoking is like something five-year-olds find.
Like,
yeah,
sex is a silly thing.
Yeah.
And adults having it is silly. Yeah.
What else I found upsetting about it is the song you were playing during that scene.
Isn't it like it's just too good to be true? Or...
No,
it's
like a
everything.
Soul, like it's an R&B like soul song, but I can't
it was
remember
like
this.
Disco song.
Is it?
Hot.
I don't know. Anyway. Wow.
I think it's called My Everything or something like that. But that the whole thing is gross.
It's
bad.
Yeah, it is bad.
Period.
Because I mean, there's also Helena Bonham Carter goes down on
Johnny Depp. Oh, yeah, which
that's
is
also
fucking terrible.
And it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny Depp, by the way, Mr. Burton, rule number one of having, like, a romance in your movie, don't have your male character fuck so many other people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
no, and
again, if he's ostensibly interested in one person, why is he getting fucked by so many
people?
Yeah.
If you want your viewers to even remember the girl he's to be, like, rooting for to get
yeah.
together with, don't then pair him up with Camp Queen Angelique and Camp Queen Junior Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah.
Don't. Why
it's
would
such,
you?
Also, the sex scene in general is such like an inconsequential scene. Nothing comes of it. Like there's
yeah,
no scene at the end where like where he's like, incidentally, Victoria, I had sex with that crazy witch, and she's not like, whoa, this annoys me. If you cut that whole scene, it would affect nothing. Angelique is still mad at him, as she's always been mad at him, and it doesn't matter.
Although
yeah.
I think, you know, if the world was going to blow up, if that sex scene was cut out of the movie, the way to fix that short of cutting it would be to just cut it all the way down. Like, it goes on for like 20
no,
seconds.
It goes on for super fucking... It feels much longer.
It feels
than
a lot longer.
Is.
But then it's essentially a setup for them to kind of smash cut to the two of them
in a wrecked room.
Final,
yeah.
Yeah.
In a wrecked
trailer.
Room and for
yeah.
him to go like... Well, that was an unfortunate
turn of
events.
It was a regrettable turn
of events.
Yeah.
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 And it's not, I feel like there's even, it's not that that scene is inherently unfunny. Like, I think, again, had it been a series of quick shots of, like, her eight arms around him and then, like, being slammed against a wall. And just, like, real quick, you don't even see anything, really.
Ugh.
It's just, like, bam, 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 bam. And all of a sudden he's like, whoa, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it might almost
tongue?
Be funny. Oh, my God. She has a fucking forked tongue.
I could have done without.
Well, it's not that it's forked, it's that it's, like, 18
no, it's long and forked.
Yeah,
it's
but
so bizarre.
For me, it's
yeah.
not just forked, it's the fact that it's 10 inches long and
yeah.
comes out of her mouth like a frog.
Her, yeah, it should
yes.
also be, she has the most fucking ambiguous powers in this movie. I don't know what she can do, except that she can do pretty much anything, and also she's made of candy glass.
She invented
yeah.
vampires, right? Like,
yeah.
she just made a vampire.
She turned him into
a vampire.
Yeah.
vampire.
It's kind of a...
From a long distance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he jumped off that cliff as a human.
And then he was
a vampire.
Vampire. Yeah.
yeah. How did she do that?
I don't know. I really don't.
Question mark.
Yeah.
yeah. God. God, that character's a fucking mess.
Fuck this movie.
Shall we go to, I have look and mouth feel.
okay.
Was there anything you guys wanted to say about look and mouth feel?
Well, I think you don't like it. I like it.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I feel like the movie is too washed out looking, and I get that it's supposed to punch up the splashes of red and orange and occasionally blue that they throw in. I think that would be more effective and less of... You can wash it out a little, but just wind it back. Because it's almost grayscale at certain points. And it tends to... The color correction tends to make everyone look vampiric, especially people who are not vampires.
It didn't super bother me either,
I like,
honestly.
I like desaturation. Twilight Princess is my favorite Zelda game.
Yeah.
no one's favorite aesthetic pick, but it's mine. So, I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority of people who, like, sort of washed out things in general, but...
I think, it's set in the 70s, which was, like, an aesthetically ugly time period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's set in a New England fishing village, which is, like, sort of overcast
gray.
And gray.
Yeah.
So, like,
okay.
It doesn't bother me, and it's fine if it bothers you. It also, you can also be bothered because this is, like, one of Tim Burton's, like, tricks coming out again to,
right.
like, do this sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not that big of a deal for me.
I do hate Helena Bonham Carter's look.
Yeah, so she really...
She's weirdly pale even before she becomes
yeah.
a vampire.
And she has, like, a tomato soup wig.
Yes! Well, and the hairline is very wiggy.
I think so what I like is I think the production design and the sort of
yes.
cinematography.
The set design.
Some of the costumes and some of the makeup, I mean, Johnny Depp,
mm-hmm.
is just
out of control.
Awful.
Yeah, it is.
The set design for the house is amazing.
Yeah,
there's
this super aquatic theme going through the entire
mm-hmm.
house. Like, there's seahorses everywhere and eels and mer people. Honestly, like, one of the problems I have with this movie is that we spend a lot of time in the house, but we only really spend a lot of time in that main room.
The foyer.
And so it's like, you don't really see how these other rooms connect to each other. You see,
mm-hmm.
like, a kitchen, and you see, like, I guess, Elizabeth's office or something like that.
I always wonder about that weird... That one, the most architecturally confusing one, is how there's a staircase to go into Carolyn's room, and then, like, somewhere where Helena Bonham Carter comes in is on the other side of that staircase.
Yeah.
yeah.
The hallway doesn't seem to go any further past. but it's only like a short staircase. And where's that hallway going?
Yeah,
like,
and also it's must, but her room is also directly above the entry, like the main room,
yeah.
because that's where Ava Green gets thrown to.
Like,
what
I
is
almost
like,
feel like
what's
they
the blueprint?
Created an architectural impossibility.
Yeah.
And can you guys guess what my favorite room was?
I honestly don't know.
Macrame room.
Oh, yeah. That's a good throwaway joke. Where Barnabas is going to like open up what he believes to be like a secret room, and it's full of macrame, and Elizabeth is just like, "That's where I keep the macrame."
Yeah.
Which is another great Elizabeth moment.
Yeah, it was a solid joke.
I don't know any of this shit. No, I run this game.
Yes.
Yeah, I liked a lot of that. I agree with Lee. Like, some of the costumes were very special. I thought there were some that just totally flopped for me, especially Victoria's end look with the Hot Topic girl.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no, 100%. We can all agree that that's just like Tim Burton masturbating on paper.
They do.
Yeah.
Don't like Barnabas's look one bit.
No, he's not a very sexy vampire.
His hair is terrible.
I don't.
Yeah, he has like a Liza Minnelli wig on.
I can't.
And it's like the sharpest like strands of hair coming down.
I hate that hair piece so much. But I don't need my vampire to be sexy necessarily. But
I think there should be some magnetism to him, like Bela Lugosi.
I agree. But
well, it's like he took the Nosferatu bit with the hands.
Yeah, and the pointy ears.
Yeah,
but then was like, but he should still be like okay to look at.
Right,
like,
but
women will want to fuck him still. Don't worry.
Yeah,
there are two things about it I don't like. One, it feels like it's makeup for theater, where it's like they had to go so big for like the cheap seats. But then I also feel like a lot of the times his looks were way too busy. So we have, like, the hair, the makeup, the brooch, the vest, the jacket. When he goes outside, there's another hat, and then there's a sunglass.
I like that.
I feel like, yeah, his, like, wide-brimmed hat and the weird sunglasses
and
that,
his, like,
wrap around.
Batwing umbrella.
Yeah, yeah, it has, like, the long, like, the lowest peaks I've ever seen
yeah.
an umbrella. It's so weird.
Mean, those individual pieces are cool, but taken as a whole, it's too much look. We need to scale it down, guys.
So much look.
That's a lot of look. Oh my god, Tim Gunn just came in here.
Designers, there's a little too much desaturated colors here.
There really is.
So the last thing we want to pop into was faithfulness to source material, which was something I hit on when I was researching this.
Yeah.
And I found how, like, there is a small but fanatical pocket of Dark Shadows fans who are super into the series and super resent everything about this movie. And, like, again, I understand from a movie perspective how this is not a good movie, but people are bizarrely devoted to this, where they're like, well, this isn't the way the character was at all. Or, like, this character would do this thing, and
yeah,
it's different.
Tough shit.
Yeah, like, I'm really sorry the show that you cared about so much had lost all of its cultural cachet
yeah.
and has no more relevance. Yeah. It's gonna change.
Which is
And I feel like even very popular properties now when they get a film adaptation, shit's gonna change, guys. Get the fuck over it.
Which I also find weird is, the soap, like, I've never seen it, but I'm gonna go on a limb and assume, because this was something that was shot, you know, 5 episodes per week, it probably wasn't very good.
No.
Like, there was probably a lot of shitty acting, there were probably a lot of goofy storylines, and, like, that's okay. If you still
yes.
like something despite those things, I don't care. I like a lot of things that are bad, too. That's why we're doing this whole fucking podcast.
Here we are.
But, like, you cannot, like, go into this being like, I can't believe that it didn't capture, like, the shittiness of the series that
I
once loved.
You don't have the understanding that, like, a 2-hour movie is not going to resemble a 2000-hour
Yeah, exactly. Like, a 5-year soap opera.
Then, like, I don't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
Right. At a very base level... The fact is, once you have permission to adapt something, guess what? It's fucking... You can do whatever
yeah.
the fuck you
exactly.
want.
You can turn it into a
yeah.
comedy if you want
yeah.
to turn it into a comedy.
And
in
whether
fact,
or not you
bold move.
Yeah.
I applaud.
And, like, there are different schools of thought on whether or not you should feel beholden, but I am of the opinion, I mean, that you absolutely should not feel beholden. You should do what you think is right for your story.
Yeah.
Well, and also, listen, if you can't get over the fact that this product that someone else made that you happen to like got changed by a different person, then what is your life? Get over it.
And if it's like a bad, if someone, this in this case, like basically bad writers adapted this story. Like
yes.
it's
yeah.
not a matter of the fact that the adaptation, it was a bad idea to deviate from the source. It was like, no, they just did it in the wrong way.
Yeah.
They could have done it in ways where you would not have complained.
Yeah, it almost makes me want to, like, play devil's advocate with them, right? Because it's like, I don't want to defend this shitty movie, but, like, I need to defend the idea of making choices about
yeah.
this sort of thing.
Yeah, Stardust is an amazing movie.
Yeah,
yes.
And again...
Not a whole lot like the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think, like, if there's anything in my life
Extreme
that I love so much... that I would be incensed
no.
by seeing it change. And I don't think there is.
Likewise.
Like, I feel like I could go into a movie and be like, well, that's stupid. It was nothing like what I thought. But I wouldn't be, like, seeing red,
no.
you know? So real quick, looking to score, I would just say I enjoy Danny Elfman's work here, as I almost always
yeah.
do. It's a fun sort of synth-heavy, like, schlocky score. And
part of the bits seem to be inspired by, like, 80s horror movies. Because there's a lot of, like, boom, boom, boom.
There is some, and almost, like, there are parts of it that remind me of, like, the score to, like, Doctor Who in the 70s,
yeah.
where it's a lot of, like, like electronic noises going on underneath.
I couldn't tell you what any bit of music in this movie sounded.
That's
like.
I just remember like the main theme more than anything else.
Don't remember anything.
Okay.
I mean, that's just my usual attention. I think if
yeah.
the score it grabs me, it's a big score, and that's what I like.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have an ear for remembering score as much as you do. I think.
Yeah.
I do think also there were some pretty solid music cues in this movie in terms of like pop songs.
Cues.
Like
yeah.
yeah. Like,
by the way, the decision to have Alice Cooper in this movie is okay.
Solid decision.
Great.
Yeah, he looks
yeah.
good. Gotta say,
he was so charming.
Yeah, he
yeah.
was fun. It was a nice shot of energy into like a point where in the movie I sort
movie.
Of like yeah tapered
yeah.
off. And I like the Carpenters' music in the montage.
Me
like
too.
I think it's a fun, innocuous little choice. I liked the opening sequence with Knights in White Satin on the train. Like I actually really enjoy that sequence. And I think Lee had mentioned, like, is there any one of us who does not think that this movie would have been improved by just starting the movie with that train sequence and cutting
yeah.
the entire prologue about Barnabas becoming a vampire? And I think
there.
We all 100% agree
yep.
that would have been a much better start.
Yep.
So on that note, why don't we go into what fixes we have for this movie?
Sure.
All right. So what I have for this movie is one of the hooks, like why I might potentially be interested in this movie is it's a movie about like a family band together, people who are like discovering their own family, like whether it's by blood or whether it's like Victoria and Dr. Hoffman, people who just sort of show up here and find themselves kind of like welcomed into this weird place. And like that I like. I like movies where people sort of find who their family is. So one of the biggest problems I had was for a movie about family, you rarely ever see them interacting or get much indication that they even like each other. Like there are so few scenes of these people actually discussing things or like talking that it's just like it kind of flies out the window. So I wanted to rectify that. So what I want to do from the beginning is the tone, I think, is still going to be a little bit humorous. Like, i.e., the concept I have in this is that Barnabas is clearly a vampire. He's also already there whenever Victoria first shows up, so we don't get the sequence of him, like, coming. Like, he's just a member of the household. And he's very clearly a vampire. Like, everything about him indicates that he is, but the rest of the family already knows, and they're trying to keep a secret from Victoria, and so they're just playing off everything he does as being like, oh, that's just what our cousin from England does. Like, no, there's nothing weird about him avoiding mirrors. Like, why do you think that's weird? He just doesn't like to do it. But I also want it to be a lot more soapy in terms of, like, plots and general beats. So I want to kind of go back to that level of like contrived weirdness. As an overall thing for me, the family is still rich. They might not be like wildly wealthy, but they do okay. I don't really want to have to deal with the whole thing of them like returning to power when it's just more about like finding a family.
Right.
I don't want to be about your family like finding their place in the world. I want to be about you finding who your family is. So as Victoria discovers the secrets of this family, she helps the Collinses come together as a family. Victoria is our entrance to this world and the main character. When she gets to Collinswood, Barnabas is already there pretending to be their British relative. The family already knows his real deal. Barnabas is also BFFs with Dr. Hoffman. Another relationship thing I did is where David hates his father, Roger, and Roger seems to resent David. And Elizabeth and Carolyn have a loving but troubled relationship, and Victoria and David bond over their shared fascination with the supernatural. I also want some more scenes with Victoria and Elizabeth together. There's this thing apparently where in the series where Victoria is Elizabeth's illegitimate daughter.
Oh.
And so like she arranged for her to sort of get up there. And so that would be something like you might want to go into later. So I think it's important to see these two characters bond with each other. Basically, the family needs to interact a lot more. So Victoria is just the governess. She's not a love interest, and she's not the reincarnation of anyone. Roger's girlfriend is secretly Angie in disguise. We think she's a ditzy dame, but she's secretly the source of the family's curse. Angie hates the family for what they represent, a tight-knit group of weirdos who have somehow managed to persevere. She sold her soul to the devil in the 1700s in exchange for the ability to ruin the entire family. Once they're all destroyed, only then can she die. Her fling with Barnabas was an afterthought that led to her hating the entire Collins family, which has nothing to do with being spurned. Back in the 1700s, she cursed Barnabas to become a vampire. The shock of him seeing transformed to a vampire in front of her led Josette to falling from Widow's Hill. Barnabas blames himself for her death. She was not hypnotized into falling off. It was just like a stunned reaction. So everyone in this family has a secret. Victoria can commune with the dead. David can speak to his dead immortal mother. Apparently in the series, his mother is some sort of, they allude to this in the movie where Hoffman says that he believes his mother is some sort of cyclical immortality. In the series, she's like a phoenix. So she returns to life every 100 years or so. And so I kind of like the idea that like his mother is some weird immortal being, not straight up a ghost maybe. Willie is a thief trying to steal from the family. Dr. Hoffman can project herself through time. Barnabas is a vampire. Carolyn is a werewolf. Roger immolated his wife per her request to bring her to her next stage of life. Elizabeth believes her husband to still be alive, which has made her reclusive and afraid to leave the house. Mrs. Johnson, that old lady maid,
yes.
You remember her, is a Frankenstein's monster who has lived with the family for centuries. At that point, Angie reveals that she's an undead witch. So, like, once all this has come to light for everyone, Angie's like, and guess what? Also, like, I'm not really your girlfriend. I'm that witch who you knew from hundreds of years ago. At the end, Angie decides to terminate the family entirely by destroying the house with them in it. The family teams up to destroy her, and with the combined skills of everyone. So, like, you know, you have, like, Hoffman, like, knowing where to, like, shove her so that, like, a chandelier falls on her or something like that. And you have David communing with, like, ancestors of the family attacking her. Like, everyone teaming up at once. Not the weird, like, boss one after one after one after one shit. Dr. Hoffman and David's mother's spear managed to pull Angie into the depths of the house, imprisoning her in the underground catacombs. As she's being sent down, Angie hits Victoria with a curse, sending her back to the 1700s. Barnabas is sad, but Hoffman realizes during her exploration of the house, she has found a staircase that amplifies her abilities to the point that she can send people back in time. The entire family resolves to return to the past and rescue Victoria and return her to the 1970s. And you end there as like a soap opera-y sort of ending.
Or maybe like the adventure continues.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, if it's good, you can do more movies. And, like, you have one that's set entirely in the 1700s. And then you have one where they have to team up with Angie to do some shit. And, like,
right.
Angie redeems herself, sort of.
It's changed up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have a lot of soapy, like, you know, people sleeping with each other and there are alliances. And they hate each other. And now they don't. Blah, blah, blah. So that shit.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Who wants to go?
I'll go, I guess. I don't have a whole lot.
Yeah, go for it.
I removed Angie. She's gone.
Bye.
I don't like her. What I don't have a whole lot, but what I latched onto for the theme of the movie is the family idea. The only part of the flashback that I like is that it sets up this idea that Johnny Depp's or Barnabas's father told him that, like, family is the only wealth that's worth anything or something like that.
Yeah, I really, incidentally,
yeah.
Though, like, I hate that so much because it's like, they're, like, loading off money and then he's like, by the way, family's the only real treasure. And then he, like,
yeah.
Turns to the audience and is like, did you get that? This
right.
is important.
Yeah. But, like, that, honestly, like, in mine, I think, like, obviously it's start with the train, but, like, I feel like that would be a good, like literally, when they build Collinswood, they put that, like, as, like, on the veranda or
yeah.
something, like,
yeah.
on the house, there's, like, an inscription that says, family is the only wealth that matters. So it starts the same way from the train scene, where Victoria is the same sort of, like, inmate who is haunted or has, like, visions of this past, because she is just that reincarnated, and she's
yeah.
been, like, drawn here. I think I would have her be a little bit more unhinged. I think the way that I phrased earlier is like giving her a paranoid edge because she's been in an insane asylum for a long time and she's constantly afraid of being shoved back there.
Mm-hmm.
And not because she's actually mentally insane, but because like years of like sort of not like, of, like psychological torture just made her a little bit like edgy. We have the same thing where Barnabas is like uncovered. But what happens, which is revealed like in more elegant flashbacks or more elegant ways, Barnabas is a vampire, but I think that his curse began in the curse in the family began because of something he did where he like betrayed the family value in some sense.
Oh, interesting.
And cursed the entire family, in the process. Maybe he like had a brother and they were rivals and he fucked over his brother in some way and his brother put the curse on everyone.
Like a family related curse.
Yes.
Like just, yeah.
I don't want the curse to come from this weird crazy witch who like is sad that she doesn't want it, that this guy doesn't love her. Some person that was evil cast it, but it was because Barnabas did something that betrayed the family values
mm-hmm.
of your family is the most important thing. And so he is uncovered in some sort of like construction thing or whatever. And he comes back to the house and finds that the house is dilapidated and, like, everyone in the family is, like, in some sort of emotional distress. And in particular, I want David to actually be the troubled child he is on paper in this movie. I don't really have, like, a huge through line, but I think the rest of the movie is, like, the story of Barnabas redeeming himself by, like, coming back to the house and resolving to, like, bring the family back to its proper state and breaking the curse.
It's like Arrested Development.
Yeah.
I'm also starting from the Victoria train scene. I like that we all...
No, we all can 100% agree. Prologue has to go.
It feels good to
yeah.
start right there. But my thought is that Elizabeth had actually specifically arranged for Victoria to come up there because she was aware of Victoria's powers to kind of, like, not necessarily commune with the dead, but she could, like, almost, like, channel them and they could, like, speak through her. And Elizabeth is interested in doing that so that they can contact ancestors from beyond the grave to try to, like, summon up this old wisdom that she feels Barnabas, the greatest man their family ever had, could help them out of this little bit of a financial rut that they found themselves in. So she is there to be a governess, but also for this ulterior motive of trying to contact this past being. And that kind of, like, upsets this curse that Angelique had already put on Barnabas way back when. My thought is she did curse him for scorning her, but this would have been when they were, like, significantly younger and more tempestuous. Like, they're not necessarily grown adults, so it was more like... And they weren't children either, but I'll say they're around, like, 18 or 19, where maybe deciding I curse you forever for not wanting to sleep with me is...
more of a
believable.
Reasonable thing that you might
yeah.
do.
From a child. And something that you maybe 20 years later are like,
you'd be like,
oh,
oh fuck yeah.
Right.
Oops.
That was
and
oops.
Also the thing that you're still like, ha ha!
Yeah.
Right. So Victoria kind of contacting Barnabas for this kind of upsets this curse and raises Barnabas from the grave. He kind of strides back into the family, well-meaning, but sort of dopey and arrogant, thinking that he can kind of like, well, I was like so good at this before, so I don't see what could have changed, and is sort of butting into Elizabeth's efforts to revive the Collins family's, I kept the fish thing just because
mm-hmm.
I don't
know.
The business is just
yeah.
a business, and it's fine that it's fish. Angelique does have a competitive company, but she's not the like cackling business villainess. She is immortal, but she has had time to reflect and been kind of what you were saying is like, oof, like, I wish I didn't do that, but she had no idea how to undo that. So in meeting Barnabas again, she sets out to sort of try to like make amends because she feels really terrible about it. But Barnabas is A, angry, but B, is also kind of still trying to go back to their old like sexy dynamic. And she's like, I've moved on and on. I mean, I'm sorry, but I've moved on. So it's really a story more about Barnabas kind of, yes, learning how to live in the modern world, but kind of realizing, wow, I was sort of a preening peacock before, and I was missing a lot of the stuff that family can bring you, but also just treating other people, particularly maids like Angelique,
mm-hmm.
like garbage. So Angelique isn't necessarily like holding it over him, and she does want to like break this curse, but she's very put off by how he treats her when they first meet again. So he just kind of learns to be a better man, and in that process redeems himself, kind of helps the company, but allows Elizabeth to take charge, and in the end, peace is brokered between Angelique and the Collins. So.
There you go.
Does he get devampired in the end then?
No.
Okay. Important to
I'm
going to
devampire him.
Because she still can't figure out the curse, but I think like the hook is that Dr. Hoffman may have like found a legit breakthrough.
Okay.
So
would anyone recommend it?
I wouldn't, honestly. There are parts about it to enjoy, but you really have to be looking. And I find myself asking a lot, did I enjoy this movie because I enjoyed this movie, or did I enjoy it because I do this podcast and I need to look for things that work in this otherwise bad movie? I think overall it's not a fun watching experience.
Here's what surprised me.
Yeah.
I had not seen it in a long time, and so therefore I legit did not remember a lot of stuff about it. And I remember watching it sort of like on a computer screen at work when I was doing something else, and I couldn't really watch all of it in one sitting, so like I would stop it, and I would be like, well, I watched like half of it. That's all I need to know. I'll watch it again before we record.
Mm-hmm.
But a part of me was like, oh, I kind of want to like see what happens next still. And we've talked about how very easy it is for me to just like not
leave a movie.
Finish something.
Yeah.
And I did feel the need to watch it to completion. Like, I finished it last night. That was the my third sitting of watching this movie for the first time was, like, last night when I was like, let me just, like, watch the end.
What was it about the movie? Do you know?
I just, like, couldn't remember, like, what would happen next. And I was like, I remembered, like, vague images.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did. I'm obviously, like, I'm really a fan of like romance and vampire romance. Like I think I was like hoping for more of that. And I kind of knew to expect there would not be more of it.
Yeah.
But I was still like, I want to see like, I do want to see what I did get to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, in any sense.
So you're
like,
excited to see what potential was going to present itself.
I was, yeah. I was kind of like, I want to see, I remember the werewolf thing and I was like waiting for that shoe to drop, I think.
Yeah.
And that's why I felt kind of watching it. I was like, wait a minute, so what is the werewolf reveal? So yeah, I did at least, it was compelled to watch it, which is like something I am not compelled to do often.
But like a friend comes up to you and is like, hey, should I watch Dark Shadows?
I would still say no.
I think for me, this is weirdly the closest I felt to the feeling I felt when watching Southland Tales, where the first time I was like, this is fucking trash. And the second time I was kind of like, oh, this is a little intriguing. And then like the third time I was like, oh, okay, I'm feeling this. Like, it's not a good movie. And you should 100% not go into this expecting anything. But there are a lot of little beats that work for me. And so like, I can't 100% recommend this movie, but I don't think it's terrible. Like, Chris, I know you hated this movie.
Yeah.
I don't hate it that much. I don't think it's good. But
I don't
hate it.
I think comparing to Southland Tales is a...
Oh, no, it's true, because Southland Tales has... it's like polar opposites, too, right? Because Southland Tales has everything going on, and Dark Shadows has nothing going on.
Well, but it's also sort of like a Halloween cupcake you buy at, like, a Shaw's compared to...
Yeah.
Bungled filet mignon.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Well, but no, it's like a turducken or something.
Right.
Like everything thrown into it. But, like, yeah, no, it is like a store-bought, like, an adequate store-bought cupcake. Yeah.
Like a holiday-themed
one. Yeah, yeah. And so, like, if that's all you expect, you'll be fine. If you want more, don't try this. I kind of enjoyed it in a weird, dumb way.
Can you imagine the crossover between Southland Tales and Dark Shadows?
Let's imagine right now.
No.
You can go to our website at www.dratpack.com. You can like us at facebook.com/whywatchpodcast. That's about all we really do anymore.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys again in 2 weeks with a mini episode about adaptations, apparently. Because that's what we're feeling now.
That's what happens to us organically, guys.
Yeah. Just buy it out.
Buy it out.
Bye.
Bye.